a gentleman who's been covering the Raptors for many years and seen it up close and personal in what has been one of the great turnaround stories, because in November, people thought when they traded Rudy Gay, they were going to get a top pick. Now they're one game away from going to the second round of the NBA playoffs. Eric Kareen from the National Post joins us live from Brooklyn. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jason?
I'm well, Eric. You know, this season just continues to get crazier. When they made the Rudy Gay trade, did you honestly think it was the end of their season, or did you think that this team could turn around by moving him out?
Well, forget what I thought. Masai Ujiri has all but admitted he had no idea what was going to happen to the general manager of the Raptors. So for me to say I knew they would, you know, be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference after that trade would be a pretty spectacular lie. There were some encouraging signs before the trade or that the trade would help, and that Rudy Gay was taking a ton of shots and he was super inefficient while doing so. So by simply replacing some of that with, you know, average options, the offense was going to get better. But I don't think anybody envisioned it would, everything would sort of come together like it has.
Talk about Lowry specifically. How injured is he on that leg? Any idea?
Well, before, in the last few weeks of the regular season, he suffered what amounts to a bruised kneecap. And, you know, you hear the word bruise, you're like, oh, it's just a bruise, whatever. But it's actually it's a pretty serious injury that doesn't really get better with extended time or without extended rest. So I think it depends on the day, kind of. And game four, he was clearly feeling it and did not. He was limping around there. Game five, he looked more sprightly and, you know, scored 36 points. So that's a pretty good indication. So I think it sort of depends on the day. The training staff sometimes gets him up close to 100%. But, in that game four, I don't think there's any question he would have been sitting if it was a regular season game in that one.
Eric Kareen joins us from the National Post. Raptors taking on the Nets tonight in Game 6 of the NBA first round series. Lowry's a free agent potentially at the end of the year. A, do you think he wants to stay in Toronto? B, how much do you think it's going to cost the Raptors to keep him?
I just I wrote about that for the National Post today. I think he realizes what a good situation this is for him. It's a young team that could grow into something more, and to do that, they're going to need him to grow with them. I'm not sure there's a situation quite like that for him out there. Saying that, he's played a great season, and he has really earned the attraction from other teams. If they're smart, they'll see a player who works his butt off every night and his teammates love playing with just because of that, and they'll go after him. The tricky thing is there's not many teams with a ton of salary cap room who also need a point guard this summer. So, you know, I could ballpark it. I would guess something like 3 years and $36 million, $39 million at this stage. But, one major suitor could change all of that. It's just tough to see who that would be in this scenario.
I was reading your article, and you had mentioned the Lakers and thinking they might wait a year to go heavy into the free agent market. The Lakers, though, are an organization that doesn't really like losing very much. Do you think, they would speed up, or do you think they'll actually remain patient?
That's a great question, and I think we'll get a bit of an indication with whoever they bring in to coach after the resignation of Mike D'Antoni, who resigned just before he was going to get fired. That's always a good move. I think if they see a fit there, then they'll maybe go after him. But I think the Lakers have for so long been defined by their superstars. I really think their focus, and I mean their monetary focus and the use of their assets, is going to be about acquiring another superstar. And don't forget, they're going to have a pretty high lottery, a pretty high draft pick this June, and that's something we're not used to saying about the Lakers. So their whole complexion can change in a few weeks when we find out the draft order.
Eric, let's get back to the series. Jason Kidd yesterday on that conference call didn't really hide the fact that he was trying to get the refs on his side. He got a $25,000 fine today by the NBA. No shock there. We're seeing the gamesmanship early in the series. You know that before the series even started, the Nets clearly showed they didn't respect the Raptors because they lost on purpose to try to face them. Now they're down in the series. They were pumping their tires after Game 4, saying all the great things about them, trying to get in their head. Now they're complaining the officials aren't getting the calls. Does this look like signs to you that the Nets realize that maybe they're in over their head?
I mean, not necessarily in over their head, but I don't think they necessarily expected this. I don't think they expect to be pushed to the brink. This is a team that went 4-0 against the Heat in the regular season, and you know, a lot of their writers who have covered them all year basically said they didn't try more than, you know, a dozen or 15 or, you know, 20 games. They didn't give them their best effort more than that this year, just because it's an older team with veterans and they're basically pacing themselves. And they realize that the Raptors are for real, and as well, they're not playing very good basketball. You can, you know, other than Joe Johnson, which Brooklyn Net has been a consistent positive force this series, you can't really name one. It's been an odd series in that sense. Other than Lowry and Joe Johnson, you know, it's sort of been hit and miss for everybody this series.
Eric Kareen from the National Post joins us. Game 6 tonight, Raptors taking on the Nets. Any changes do you think we'll see as far as how the Nets are going to attack the Raptors in different matchups?
Well, the interesting thing about their near comeback in Game 5 was that they started to put Joe Johnson in different spots. He was dominating early in the series in post-ups, and the Raptors started aggressively helping there. So they put him sort of at the top of the key, and that sort of spaces the floor and makes for easier passes. Until the Raptors can prove they can stop it, that, you know, why not keep on going back? I'm sure Dwayne Casey is drilled what to do in those scenarios. Each game has been sort of different. So, you know, Landry Fields plays a huge role in Game 2 and then disappears for most of the rest of the series. I wouldn't be surprised to see him if Joe Johnson gets going. I wouldn't be surprised to see a little more Garnett if the Nets are in danger. Mirza Teletovic has been great for the Nets in the last few games. I think we'll see a bunch of him. But at this stage, you know, there are minor adjustments to be made, but both teams know who the other is. And it comes down to, you know, as cliche as it is, it comes down to making shots, and the Nets just haven't made enough of their open shots this series.
Basketball is always a game of runs, Eric. Were the Raptors, were they concerned at all that they gave up a 20-point lead, or the fact that, yes, the Nets came back to tie it at 101, but then the Raptors were able to have experience or just the courage not to have a complete, you know, shark collapse, if we're making a hockey reference here. How much, you know, is that a benefit to them, or is there concerns that they weren't able to put the Nets away?
Well, if you would have seen Dwayne Casey after the game on Wednesday, you know, that was the look of a man who had just dealt with a lot. I think he was genuinely concerned with the silliness of the fouls, the silliness of the turnovers, the giving away possessions by waiting until the final few seconds to try and get into the offense. And, you know, they'll say all the right things, and they have said all the right things about learning from that and how it will actually help them be sharper in Game 6. But until you see it happen, it's sort of meaningless. And one of the interesting things about this series is the games haven't really carried over in any meaningful way. We always talk about momentum in seven-game series, but it just hasn't played out like that. And to think that, you know, the Nets' second half is going to somehow carry over into Game 6 tonight, I mean, it hasn't worked out that way at all at the beginning of the first five games of this series. So, you know, this is my long-winded way of saying it all really doesn't matter, and Game 6 will probably be entirely different from what's come before it.
Looking at Paul Pierce, You know, only played 24 minutes, only had 10 points in game five. This is the guy who said, hey, it's in my DNA. I've always had the ability to be a finisher. Well, you know, is there an injury there? Was he just as bad as he looked?
Well, the I mentioned Mirza Teladovic earlier. He was a plus 31 on the night, and Paul Pierce was a minus 31. So Jason Kidd sensibly went with the guy who was helping his team win, or at least pace. Pierce, you know, he just didn't have it, and the Nets like to play smaller lineups. They're not going to play with two traditional big men much, so it's either going to be Teladovic or Pierce. You know, it's an either-or scenario. They're not going to play together. And he wasn't the better option. Might he be tonight? Maybe. But, you know, it's when a player is getting up there in age, he becomes less and less reliable from game to game, and that seems to be what's happening. It's certainly what's happened with Garnett, who looks like a shell of his former self, which has sort of murdered my childhood. But, you know, you're not my psychologist.
And how much does Kevin Garnett have left in your mind?
Not much. He's still a very effective pick and roll defender. And that's about it in terms of what he does at an elite level. He's missed a few chip-ins, or tap-ins, I should say, this series, and I wouldn't be surprised if, whether it's after this series or if they win after the next series, whenever the Nets are done, I would be surprised if Garnett came back next year. It's just, it's got to be dispiriting for somebody as, you know, demonically competitive as he is, to not be able to make more of an impact on the biggest games of his team's season.
Eric, I appreciate it. Enjoy game six and potentially game seven if it goes that far. I appreciate your time.
All right, Jason. Have a good one.